It's the Mike O'Mara Show.
That's Dean.
So, I tell you what.
I'm Dean Martin. I drank a lot of wine in my day. Welcome back to Mike O'Mara Show. I'm Mike O'Mara, my friends Buzz and Rob here in the studio. And our little old producer, Beth Ann McBride, is riding around the couch somewhere with a little stain of wine. Beth Ann actually brought in some wine for this next segment.
Very kind of her, I thought.
She brought in some Cabernet Sauvignon. Without further ado, let's get to our guest during this segment. This gentleman has written a book called Investing in Liquid Assets, Uncorking Profits in Today's Global Wine Market. Let's welcome to the Mike O'Mara Show, Mr. David Sokolin. Hello, David.
Mike, Buzz, Rob, nice
Hi.
To be here.
Hey.
David, I bet you didn't expect to get a call from a show like this, right?
You know what? I'm always prepared.
That's good. That's the right attitude.
That's nice.
That's right
good.
Answer. And, I was literally walking by one of the desks here, and I love the cover of your book. It caught my eye. And I said, investing in liquid assets, how to make money, in the wine market. I said, our listeners will have something to say about that.
Right.
They go to Costco and, they see the wine section that they've got there. My first question.
It might sound funny, but investment grade wines can be found at Costco.
Yeah, now we're talking.
No kidding.
Good
to
like
know.
That. All right, David, let's get right to it. I am not a wine expert.
Right.
But I have been called an alcoholic. Do I have a chance to make money in wine?
It's interesting because when I look at like the Jim Cramer show, for instance, I'm amazed by his breadth of knowledge on thousands and thousands of equities out there. And it makes you know what a small fish you are in such a big pond.
Mm. Yeah.
In my book, Liquid Assets, Investing in Liquid Assets, I go into the entire pool of investment-grade wines. Take a guess how many investment-grade wines I go into.
30.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. The entire pool that I've uncovered of investment.
Now, when you say liquid assets, you're talking about the entire pool of wines
of
that
wines
you can
that increase in price with
that you can make money like
make
buying
money
and selling,
investing in.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
There are 250 wines in my book.
Mm-hmm.
90% of those wines, 90% of the market is from Bordeaux. So wines from Bordeaux comprise 90% of the entire market. That's only 113 wines. Now, 90% of the Bordeaux market is done in 25 wines. So if you know about 25 wines, you've got a pretty good shot in wine investment.
So you're talking about that area is the one area where all the – and when you say investment grade, the kinds of wines that you will see at auctions and you can like put it away for a few years
Correct.
And then break it out and sell it again?
Correct. So if you know the names of 25 wines – and a few vintages, you've got basically 75% to 80% of the wine investment field covered.
So you could roll in to a Total Wine or a Costco, and you can walk in there and you can say, "Hey, there's one that's in this book. Mm-hmm. If I buy this, I can have it appreciate and actually look at it as an investment." Here's the next question that would come to mind: mm-hmm. Can people get into this racket without a lot of money?
Yes.
Okay.
It doesn't. I mean, it's sort of like asking how much money do I need to start investing in the stock market.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting question because it's very personal. However, I started thinking about that today. 2005 is the greatest vintage in Bordeaux's history.
Now we're real dummies here. So when you're talking about Bordeaux, you're talking about a region of France, and it's a grape, right?
There is a region in France called Bordeaux where the home of Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot.
Guess what? Hey, I got to tell you something, David. You know what we're drinking right now?
Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah, we opened up a bottle.
What are you drinking?
We're having a 2003
yes.
Chateau Sauvignon Alexander Valley Cabernet Sauvignon.
How is it?
It's pretty damn good.
Not bad.
B+.
You guys drink on the air often?
Yes.
Yes,
it's one of our themes.
It's shaping up that way.
But, I mean, we knew we were going to have a wine.
You're very loose.
We knew, it hasn't even kicked in yet. We knew we were going to have a wine expert on, so what better thing to do while you're talking to a wine guy than have a nice little sip of wine? So,
well, while we're on the air at the end, I'll see if I can look up and see if there's a score. Because when start talking about investment-grade wine, we talk about two things, really, that make an investment-grade wine.
Okay.
Number one is the point score that it receives.
So now when you say point score, I'll give you what I see. I go to Costco, and I'll see that Wine Spectator gave the wine a certain number. That's not the score we're talking about, right?
Well, that actually is.
It is. Hey,
all right. There are four people.
I'm not a dummy.
So,
yeah, all right. I'm
there
not
are
a
four
dummy.
People in the wine investment industry that count and basically are the main analysts for wine.
You mean those numbers really mean something when I see those?
The Wine Spectator is one of the most powerful critics in the wine field. They can make or break a wine with a score.
They're like appraisers for our purposes,
basically,
right?
They're appraisers or analysts.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So the Spectator, if you subscribe to winespectator.com, mm-hmm. if you also subscribe to robertparker.com, who is basically the number one wine investment critic. Additionally, there's a guy named Stephen Tanzer, his website, and then there's one more called named Alan Meadows, and he has a site called Berghound.
So you're talking about 25 wines you'll have to know.
You're talking about 25 wines making 75% of the market.
Okay.
You could really just subscribe to winespectator.com and robertparker.com. You'd have essentially the same tools as the big pros like myself use to trade wine with. It's the wine equivalent of having, let's say, a Bloomberg terminal.
All right. So let me stop you right there. So I know it sounds actually rather easy. I know the 25 wines that obviously there are a few more, but I know these 25 wines that I'm going to focus on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then I go to Wine Spectator, and I see that this particular wine, one of the 25, mm-hmm. the type that I'm looking for, is rated very highly by Wine Spectator.
Right.
I buy that. The odds are that it's going to appreciate?
The odds are that it is.
Okay.
These wines, and you might ask why, because prices have gone, pretty high in the past 10 years.
Right.
Well, we have new client bases coming online rapid fire right now. Think of, when I started in the business in 1992, people said, Dave, how's 82 Lafite Rothschild, which is a 100-point wine from Bordeaux, how is this wine going to appreciate? They made 25,000 cases of it. How is it going to, appreciate in price? There's just so much of it out there.
Right.
And my pitch back in the day was, well, listen, there's enough people on Park Avenue and Fifth Avenue alone in New York to buy a case of wine. There's too many people, and there's not enough wine. And that pitch was true, but it's never been so as true as it is now. Think about how many.
Now, are you saying that people will drink it? Is that why? And that won't be around.
Think about the amount of consumers coming online in Asia, in South America, mm-hmm. in Eastern Europe. The amount of Lafite produced each year hasn't changed, but the amount of people demanding it has increased.
So it's supply and demand, like any economic formula.
Well, it's a simple supply and demand thing.
Right.
And if you're pissed off about the concentration of wealth, mm-hmm. in the hands of just some hedge fund managers, right. investing in wine is a way to sort of capitalize on that. Because
Now let me ask you that. Now, before we get any further with the details of this, I mean, how much money are we talking about? I mean, are there people that make a living doing this?
I mean, there's people like myself who make a living. There's a lot of amateurs who make a living.
Wow.
When in the beginning of the book, I talk about there's three kinds of wine investors. One is an accidental wine investor. Guys like you who buy a bottle here, a bottle there, and they collect it, hold on to it, and see the price appreciate over time to a level where they're pretty confident.
I wish I could hold on to it, David.
I don't think you guys can. I wish I could.
I just can't. I swear to God, I have people over, and it's gone.
You have to sell all your wine every Friday.
It's every Friday I have to, I have to sell all my wine. It's
David,
very
like
what
other...
you guys do is what we call liquidating pleasurably.
That's right. We do. And that's fun, too.
Like with other investments, is it possible to hang on to a wine too long?
Okay. It is possible. Wines have, these arcs, these lifespans.
Mm-hmm.
However, with today's technology, if you're a member of winespectator.com or robertparker.com, embedded in each review is an anticipated maturity date. So as a wine investor, it's your job to basically look at the anticipated maturity date and sell it around its peak.
But don't, write with a Sharpie on the label, right?
You don't want to write on this. Exactly.
It's a very, very bad thing to do if you do that. It's very dangerous.
Just for example, you mentioned, was it an 82 Lafite Bordeaux you were talking about?
This is a 1982 Chateau Lafite Rothschild.
What did it cost in 82? What is it worth now?
Okay, well, there's an amazing phenomenon that's happened with Lafite. Asia has really latched on to the Lafite Rothschild brand.
Oh!
I'm sorry, that's our Asia sound that we
okay,
made.
Okay, I yeah. copy.
All right, no problem.
So we sold futures, Bordeaux futures, meaning we sell it to you 2 years before it arrives. It has to sit in the barrel and mature and then is bottled. So we sell you, you know, the wine 2 years in advance. In 1983 for delivery in 1985, we sold it for $50 a bottle.
All right.
12 bottles in a case was $600 a case.
Okay.
Today, 1982 Lafitte, 100 points Robert Parker, sells for $3,500 per bottle.
Per bottle?
$42,000 a case.
A whole tray?
I want to be a wine trader.
I want a time machine.
I want to be, and that's really, that's an amazing.
Astounding.
Pretty impressive.
So it's $600 for the case. Mm-hmm. And do the math. I mean, the case.
$600 to $42,000. Figure out the IRR on that.
Oh my God! All right, David, would you take some questions from our listeners?
Let's go. 700%.
Okay, 877-365-3636. Let's go to Jason in Baltimore. You have a question for Mr. Sokolin.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. I like it when we're talking expensive wines at the Mike O'Mara Show. It makes me feel very NPR-ish.
Oh, I have a question.
My name is Paul Schwette. You must try my balls. All right, go ahead, Jason.
Are there any legal ramifications for reselling quantities of wine like that, since alcohol regulations vary so much from county to county and state to state?
Tell me about it. All you have to do is read the newspaper. You'll know about my dealings with regulations of alcohol. Read the Manassas Journal Messenger. Sorry, I owned a restaurant, David, and we had some fines.
Well,
all right.
Well, there are most certainly legal restrictions depending upon state to state, and I'm not sure where you live. There are certainly a lot of auction houses that have the ability to resell your wine, and they've figured out how to deal with that.
So what you're saying, if you've got a a wine that you can't necessarily trade in that state that you're in, you can take it to an auction house and they can sell it for you, right?
I'm not sure of every state in the world that hasn't gotten in the way of a very large industry, but I'm sure there are certain regulations from state to state. You have to check out what they are as per where you live.
I bet it's tough in Virginia, David.
All the commonwealths, I bet.
I can imagine.
All right, this is one thing that I have heard, and I'm sure you're going to back me up on it, but price does not necessarily mean quality, right?
You know, it's interesting. They just came out with a study, and this was, I think, on the Journal a few days ago, mm-hmm. where they did these blind tastings, same wine.
Right.
They told, the only thing that people knew was that one glass was $20 and one glass was $100 a bottle, and they had to decide what they liked more. They were told no other information about the wine, and hands down, everyone chose the $100 wine. However, they were the same wine. One thing that I always do that's, when someone comes across as a wine expert, I will give them the same wine in two different glasses. And, the big glass is always more inviting. And, they always have an opinion that's probably different about.
Right, the two.
Money, really, when you go into your restaurant, per se, do you find that people order off the price side or the wine side?
Well, I find it's dark right now. I had to close.
But
okay.
Think back, Mike.
Sorry. Okay, my bad.
What do you remember?
I remember, no. I mean, you know what it is? I've always found, this is the way I do it now, it really is, and I've actually gotten in kind of into it with wine experts in fancy restaurants because sure. I know what I like.
The sommeliers?
And, yeah, the sommeliers. Because I won't, necessarily buy all their BS
right.
if I'm not enjoying the taste of something. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes I've gotten in a little bit of a discussion with the sommelier about that. But I just know what I like.
So what do you give your taste, Ron?
I love a good Cabernet. Right. I really like that. I like a nice buttery Chardonnay.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you on that.
I like that.
You had a good one at your restaurant.
And it all tastes exactly the same after my eighth glass. Mm-hmm. I'm a connoisseur, David. Do you want to take some more phone calls?
Love to.
Let's go to Fred in New Mexico. Fred in New Mexico, you're on with David Sokolin.
Hey, I've got about a half a case of French Burgundy, 81, and it's got the lace, the metal lace cover on it with the lead seal on the bottom. How much is something like that worth these days?
Well, it's a pretty wide open question because Burgundy is a region in France, just like Bordeaux is a region in France.
Sure.
So the one piece of data that you gave me is that I can latch onto is 1981. 1981 is not an investment grade year in wine.
Ah.
And what I mean by that is the 81s didn't have the longevity necessary to make it to this day and age. It's probably a wine that what we call fell apart. It didn't aged long enough. They were good wines up to a certain point, but you needed to drink the 81s by 90, 95.
Oh, man, you're out of luck, Fred. Sorry about that. My sympathies. Hey, real quick, David, while we have you on the line, for people that might just have a pen out right now, throw out good vintages, good years for wine, just to, you know, just so people...
Easy to find, but tasty.
Yeah, just good years. Like, if you're looking for a good year, what would you want to go for and what would you want to shy away from?
Good question. I'm going to give you the vintages that are across the board because, you know, there's a lot of good years in a specific place. Like I said, 82 was an amazing vintage in Bordeaux. But more recently, there have been a few vintages that were great globally. And
vintages are years for those of you know, for amateurs like me.
So we'll go back as far as 1990 was one of these global vintages. You could buy wine from Spain, France, California.
Thanks for writing this down, Buzz.
Italy,
I appreciate it.
An amazing vintage.
Okay.
1990. Fast forwarding, 2000 was an amazing vintage across the globe.
It's kind of interesting that it's you know, both even numbers like that, like 2000 and 1990.
2003. Now, you'll remember in Europe, 2003 was the year of a heat wave.
Right.
Yes.
And it had a profound effect on
I remember that when I was staying at my country home in Europe, David.
God,
of
you
course.
Sweaty.
I remember that. Yes, it was so very, very hot.
Hot into that beret.
But the servants fanned me. Go ahead, David.
And then most recently and most important, the vintage that everyone should be paying attention to is 2005.
Right.
In Bordeaux, 2005 was the greatest vintage in history. In Burgundy, 2005 was the greatest vintage in history.
And that's, I would imagine, there because of the recent vintage, you got a lot of product out there.
That's exactly right.
Uh-huh. How did I do with that?
Very
pretty good.
Huh? As a follow-up, what made it the greatest in history? Was it the amount, the quality? How do they gauge that?
Well, you know, global warming isn't a good thing, but it might actually be okay for wine.
Well, that's because if the planet burns up, we're all going to be wanting to be wasted anyway.
Exactly.
It'd be fantastic. Go ahead.
Wine, really, grapes really enjoy a lot of sunlight. Ah. And in 05, especially in France, there was an amazing growing season, and there wasn't a lot of rain. There was a drought. And, you know, you'd think that a drought wouldn't
be good.
What wouldn't be good for wine? What would you think that the effect of it would dry up the grapes? But actually, it's the opposite.
Yep, I know.
In 05, the drought created wines that were fresh and juicy and amazing and singular.
All right, 2005. Now we're running short on time.
Okay, let's keep it going.
I'm going to take three quick questions from listeners here, and then I've got two more for you before we let you get out of here because we are running short on time. Let's go to Ryan in Reno, Nevada. Ryan, you have a question for David.
Hi, Ryan. You guys are my freaking gods. I love you guys.
Thank you very much. What's your question for David Sokolin?
Cheers.
The question is, I've got a bottle of Merlot autographed by Edgar Allan Poe. How much does that go for?
Valid question. Does the celebrity factor have anything to do with this?
It's not like guitars where if you have less call sign, it's worth more. It's really what's in the bottle. Occasionally, a signature can do something, but it's really more for novelty and not for investment grade.
I am so tempted when he answers that question to say, I'm surprised you didn't know that, even though I didn't know anything about it. Let's go to Steve in Rockville. Go ahead, Steve. You got a question for David.
Yeah, thanks. I was just wondering, that taste test based on price, do you think the people were afraid to choose the $5 wine because they didn't want to be looked down at, like a white trash maybe or something like that?
It's always the case. And because I am, you know, I'm a wine professional, I'll go into wine list and play price chicken. I will actually order the least expensive wine on a menu. I'm not afraid to do that. Mm-hmm. And if it's not good, I'm not afraid to tell them. But, yes, people are afraid to underpay for wine.
And one last question from our vast listening audience here. Let's go to Andrew in Winchester, Virginia. Andrew, you're on with David.
Hey, Mike, love the show. David, quick question for you. How readily can you sell wine that you say is a $30,000 or $3,000 bottle of wine? How readily can you sell that on the open market?
That is a great question.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of demand, and you just need to find the right resellers. If you come to Sokolin.com, we're big buyers of wine like that.
There
we have endless demand for that.
Get that plug in there, David. Way to go. You're a businessman first. I respect that. All right, we got to let you go, but I got a quick question first of all. How do you sample a lot of wine? And quick answers, David. How do you sample a lot of wine without getting loaded?
Spit.
Thank you very much. What is your personal favorite under $30?
Oh, there's a wine called Waterstone that is leftover California cult wine. Cult wine is wine made in very small batches that cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars a bottle. But what they do with their leftover juice is sell it to this one guy who bottles it under the Waterstone label. We have this wine for $19.95, and it tastes reminiscent of those wines that cost $500-$600 a bottle.
Wow. And all right, the last two questions here. What is the best wine in the world as far as your taste is concerned, and what is the most valuable? That's the last two questions for you.
For me, I think they go almost hand in hand. I had a 1990 Petrus a few weeks ago. It's a wine from Bordeaux again. It was rated 100 points.
How do you spell it? How do you spell Petrus?
P-E-T-R-U-S.
Very good.
And it was about $7,000 a bottle.
Oh.
It's 100% Merlot. Merlot gets a bad name in sideways. Meanwhile, the most expensive wine in the world is Petrus, made of 100% Merlot.
Hmm.
And, you know, I think that was one of the greatest wines I've ever had in my life. And Chateau Petrus is certainly, you know, the most expensive chateau on earth.
You know what? A lot of people would say, hey, what are you doing here? You know, you went on a limb getting this guy on the show. I do not regret one single second of this interview.
Of course,
David,
not.
You
it's
are
rock and roll wine, guys.
You are the man. The book is Investing in Liquid Assets, David Sokolin, Uncorking Profits in Today's Global Wine Market. David, what is your website again?
It's www.sokolin, S-O-K-O-L-I-N.com. And we have the most expensive wines in the world, but also the least expensive wines that taste like them.
Oh, you rock. David Sokolin, thank you so much.
Thank
for coming
you.
On
care,
the show.
Guys.
And I'm sorry that I called you Sokolin for the entire interview and till the very end.
You pronounce it like the French.
All right, you're a good man, and we appreciate you coming on the show. And hopefully, if we have any wine questions, we can call you down the road.
I'll see you next time, guys.
Thank you very
cheers.
Much, David.
Bonjour.
Right, good man.
Hello.
That was fun.
It was.
I like that.
It was pretty good.
He had his eye on the bottom line, but he knew everything.
And what I like is Buzz is over there, like, writing all this stuff down.
Oh, yeah.
Like the vintages and
I
all
like
that.
I like the idea of that wine that's cheap but tastes expensive.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. I mean, who doesn't?
Is it Waterstone?
Waterstone for $20.
I'm going to buy that.
I'm going to go to that website, check it out for anybody, for all the winos in our listening audience.
I'm going to go home and have a beer.
I'm going to chug this wine. And we're going to go to commercial. But before we do that, I forgot. I got to tell you what we're doing right now.
What?
Ladies and gentlemen, I know here in Washington, D.C., we said we wanted to coddle you a little bit.
Yeah.
It's been unbelievably wet. We've gotten flooding all over the D.C. area.
What are you?
Well, now that flooding can actually pay off for you, ladies and gentlemen.
In
Let
spades?
Me stop that because I know Rob wants to play something. Ladies and gentlemen, this is How Wet Are You? All right. This is how this game works. Very simple. Get on the line to get on the air, 877-365-3636.
Yeah.
We all know that we've had heavy rain, lots of it,
more than we've had
in quite some time.
Flooding, washouts.
Yes. It's a little loud.
Flooded basements.
You can see the size of the flood.
Oh, look at this, the flood waters. Now, there's nothing funny about a flood.
No.
We don't want anybody with the stories of death. I don't think anybody's been killed due to the flooding.
I don't think so, no.
I think we've been lucky in the metro area, but Lord knows I've flooded, known a lot of people that have flooded. And right now, your How Wet Are You story can result in a prize for you. And what better way to celebrate a flood in your house than by a trip to the theater to enjoy tickets to see Riverdance.
That's delightfully cruel.
Live at Wolf Trap, Thursday, May 19th. Should be able to be dry by then, hopefully.
It's on a hill. You want to sit towards the top of the hill.
For more info and tickets, you can call 877-WOLF-TRAP or wolftrap.org. How wet are you?
How
wet are
you?
It's quite simple, ladies and gentlemen. The best flood story, and these will be stories like within the last 24 hours, we'll win the tickets to see Riverdance.
River.
Take your mind off problems.
If you're all wet and you've got a bad flood story, we're here to ease your pain. 877-365-3636. We will give a person tickets to Riverdance when we come back on the Mike O'Mara Show.
It's the Mike O'Mara Show.